This is a Cyber Union talk show for Monday, November 7th, 2011. Walton is half cut and I'm playing catch up.
Steven, how's your catch up going?
Oh shit, we were supposed to do the other intro first, but I guess we'll just go ahead. I'm doing fine. Let me open the beer. Just for everybody out there, we're celebrating our 25th episode, which we were not quite sure if we'd ever get to. So with that, here's my celebratory sounds. I hope that sounded well. Mm-hmm. There we go. Mine's not going to ding like that.
And unfortunately for Steven, and perhaps unfortunately for the listeners, I've been celebrating for quite a lot longer than Steven. It's very much later in Scotland than it is in Boston, and I have been celebrating all night. So, as Stephen intimated earlier, I am half cut. So, we will do our best to do a coherent show. But if I stop making sense, then I hope Stephen will be able to step in and tow me back in line.
Well, before we get there, we should probably share what we're drinking. What is your celebratory drink that you have in front of you right now?
Well, there've been many over the course of the evening. But currently we're on something called Abelauer Abunni, which is a very, very fine single malt whiskey from the Abelauer Distillery in Scotland. And it's aged in Spanish Oloroso casks. It's 60.9% alcohol, so it's quite strong. Ooh. And it's a really lovely whiskey with a strong sherry finish, and it's in its price range, one of the best whiskies you can get, definitely. So, definitely recommended. Fantastic whiskey, and it's making me feel very, very righteous right now.
That's great. Maybe I might have to prepare myself to do a one-man show if we get too far into this with a 69% alcohol. But I, on the other hand, I'm not drinking something as strong. However, pretty dark. I have myself in my hands a regionally brewed Harpoon Chocolate Stout, which I just took a sip of for the first time, and
sounds
it
awesome.
It is really good. I mean, it is quite literally a very, I mean, chocolatey isn't even the right term. I feel like I'm drinking chocolate. And it is very, very, very good beer. I'll have another beer later on once I finish this one. Hopefully our recording and all goes together quite mm-hmm. well for this, so we don't screw up too much. But I would cheers you, but my screen camera's not working, so.
Slancha.
There, I hit the microphone. 25 episodes, Walton. Did you ever think we'd get this far? I didn't.
No, I mean, you contacted me back in March or April saying, hey, let's do a podcast. And I was like, well, let's try it. But, you know, I remember thinking at the time, like, what is there really to talk about? We'll do one or two shows, and it'll be about how trade union activists can use Facebook and Twitter to send their message out. And then we'll maybe talk about some of the limitations of Facebook and Twitter and why using Linux is cool. And that'll be two or at most three shows completely accounted for. And there'd be nothing else to talk about. And that would be the subject matter exhausted. And it would be a useful experiment, but it'd be over. And yet here we are, not only still recording the show, but based on downloads, there are actually some people listening to it. And that I find remarkable because, you know, I find it really, really odd that anyone would want to listen to our drunken ramblings on unions and technology. But there you go. You know, some people clearly have too much time on their hands.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely much different than I initially thought. I remember having the thought of the idea a long time ago. I think I may even had it back in grad school, and I just had never had the technical know-how to even put the idea together or mm-hmm. the discipline to do it. But then I just let it go. I didn't even like follow up or write anything up on the idea. I just saw a connection here, and then I remember, I think I found you on Identica originally through the labor group, the ILM, the Identica labor movement group, which I used to be very active on and still to a point am. But and then I followed your link to your site and I was like, cyber unions, like, oh, this is interesting. And I started reading up on the stuff that you had and I was like, this is great. Like, this is half or if not more of like what I initially thought. I'm like, but somebody already did it. And then, then one day I was like, you know what, why don't I just reach out to this guy and see what happens? And lo and behold, here we are, with
25 episodes down the line with a drink in our hands. So
And not only that, it's just now that we've gotten things a little bit more organized and have ideas for future shows and everything like that, I just feel that the ideas are almost endless of where the show can go.
And also, what a brilliant practical example of cyber unionism in that we've never met each other. You know, like we've never been in the same continent or you know, actually sat down in the same physical space and had a conversation, and yet we've managed to collaborate on a project which is going quite well. And I think that is just like, it's an awesome practical example of what you can do, is like find other people who are interested in the same stuff that you're interested in and get involved, do something together.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I think it's, and it's not like that doesn't mean that the similar people are in the region where you are. It's just a matter that I think in my case, the way I think about it is technology is part of this experiment that we're even doing, and technology is exactly what brought us together in the first place. So it's kind of cool in that sense, and really trying to explore how we can interconnect and learn from each other in a more efficient means than we have. Not to say that movements haven't been strong and effective and efficient in the past, but now it's much easier to get information to each other and making sure that it's in a form that we can share it and continue to build it, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say one thing that really kind of struck me is I remember when we first put the show together too, and when we were a bit of a rookies on even the idea of it, we had no idea who our listeners were going to be. And and we initially thought that, oh, this is going to be a lot of union folks and we need to kind of gear it towards that. And then we kind of just, like, as things grew, we just started getting a lot of good feedback that started identifying a lot of who our listeners are. And in a lot of cases, it's a very diverse dynamic of people that are from many different backgrounds, not necessarily the unions, which is the funny part. I mean, we have some, not to diminish the amount of union listeners we do have, but we have a lot of people who are not actually in a union, you know, are supportive of it, but have no idea what they can do to exercise their worker rights and collective rights for that matter. So it's really interesting to see that dynamic of where our listeners are and where they're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, it totally surprised me because I get the sense that there are a lot of people listening to the show who are programmers who work in IT in some way, who don't really know much about unions. And I think it's really awesome that we've been able to make a connection and talk to that audience about collective action and how trade unionism works. I guess I'm a bit surprised that there's been less input from the mainstream unions. I kind of thought that they'd be very interested. The radical unions have been really, really keen. Like a lot of IWW members have listened to us from the starts and have actively commented on our shows and, you know, been quite good at engaging with us, and also some of the software freedom activists. And a lot of the kind of people who are interested in politics and software have listened to the show. But yeah, it's interesting to see how the community develops, because I think the purpose for putting together a show like this is to develop a community of people who are interested in using free and open source software to give power to working class people and to trade unions and to working people's organizations, particularly by connecting them with each other so that they can express practical solidarity across international borders.
Yeah, it's quite interesting in a lot of the senses. It's the more radical ones and the two different kind of movements that we're working with, which is labor and free and open source software movements as well. And I think it's kind of cool that there's a cross of it, a cross stitch of like the individuals that listen to the show. And the cool thing is the new places where I'm starting to see listeners coming from, and they're starting to be in social movements, not necessarily labor movements themselves, but are kind of connected to it that way too. And I think that's great because it plays to the breadth of what our discussions are about, and how you know, there's a lot that these movements can learn from each other, and whether it's free software learning from labor, or labor learning from free software, or social movements learning from free software and utilizing these things. It's just really interesting. So I mean, it's funny too, because like the more I think about it, I realize that I'm a dual activist, I guess, in the case of activists for free and open source software as well as for labor. And wherever I run into people, I it's not judging, but I start looking at what they're using and think about how the restrictions that the stuff that they're using has, even though they think it's a little bit liberating. And it's kind of interesting to think about how there's this idea that using, you know, an iPhone is liberating, you can do more. And I'm like, well, that's not liberating when you can't actually change what's on your phone and can't do what you want with the phone. You can do what, you know, Apple wants you to do with the phone.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I speak to lots of union people all the time who are totally enamored of Facebook, and they think they've discovered this fantastic tool. They can create union campaigns on Facebook. And half of me is saying, that's fantastic, because you've discovered the power of the internet and you're connecting with people and all that kind of stuff. And part of me is going, oh no, you know, you're getting sucked into Facebook's appalling universe. You're adding yourself to activist databases, which can be accessed by anyone. There's so much more that you could be doing if you just had a bit of discernment about the kind of software that you're using. So it's an interesting field, and hopefully by having these kind of collaborative and collective conversations about what works and what doesn't, we can work towards some good practice and some consensus about what's the best way to practice liberation technology.
Yeah, no, it's very true. It's very true, and it's exciting. It's very exciting to see where the show is really kind of taking us. I mean, it's not like we have set plans of exactly what we're going to talk about. I mean, a lot of what we talk about ends up being on feedback from a lot of our listeners, and also information that's sent to us, as well as things that just happen to come up. I mean, we've been talking a lot about Occupy because it's a new thing that's going on, a movement that's occurring, and that's even influenced some of the topics that we've discussed on the show. So it's what I like is that the I guess you could say manifesto of our show is living. It's always changing to what's going on, and I think we've, at least I would hope to say that we've done a good job adapting to the things that are going on.
That could just be a really nice way of saying we totally disorganized. We throw all this stuff together at the last minute.
don't tell them our secrets now, Walton. although our guests that have been on the show, I've seen how we've put things together. You know, we completely edited those guests into the show. They're not real people. But I guess you know, we've kind of talked enough about where we've gone or where we've come with the show. It's just really kind of cool, just for the listeners who've been jumping onto us since in the recent times, instead of getting from the beginning. And not that I'm saying you should go back to listen to us then, we're kind of inexperienced at that time, but
yeah, we still sucked back in the early days.
But just giving a kind of recap of the idea, because both of us, if you know, our listeners don't know, we're coming from labor union backgrounds and came into free and open source software just by chance, and it heavily connected to what were the larger movement, and we saw a gap. We saw a huge gap that labor lacks any involvement in this. And when I say labor in that sense, it's the mainstream labor movements. There are a lot of fringe and radical labor movements that are a little bit more up to times with things, but still have a heavy reliance on corporate controlled instances of like Twitter and Facebook and, you know, Microsoft Word and the operating systems that they're running to, you know, the applications that they're running on their phone. And, you know, it's just, I think what we saw was that there's a chance to have a discussion that isn't happening. And I hope that we've done a good job filling that gap. And if we haven't, I hope there are other people that are willing to contribute as well, because we don't want to be the only ones that are doing this. But other than that, Walton, I wanted to see if you wanted to jump into some other things that have been going on in our areas, just so we can give a bit of a news feedback, since we've done enough of
a drunken ramble.
Drunken ramble.
Yes.
Plus, I got to finish my beer soon, so I can get to the other one.
We can jump into whatever you like, but you'd have to lead it because I'm feeling a bit incoherent. So you can be the sensible one. I can be the drunken rambler, because as you say, you're the one.
Catch up aren't going to happen.
Yeah, you're not catching up fast enough.
Hold on, let me chug this sucker. So I guess we'll go into some updates and things that we've been doing the last week. Since last week's show, we did a heavy emphasis on a lot of books that we're recommending. And I think we're going to, based on the feedback we've already gotten, I'm going to try to do that as a regular series to the show, so we can kind of introduce some new books as well as other books that we've consumed.
Are we going to give people homework?
I guess we could try to do that, but it depends. Do we have any TAs that can do the grading for us? Teaching assistants? there's a whiskey bottle opening there. In addition to our as Walton pours the whiskey in the glass right by the microphone, if you guys listeners couldn't figure that out, we are gonna actually try to reach out to some booksellers out there to promote as places that we'd recommend people to get to purchase their books, because if anything, we'd prefer, and at least my preference, I'm pretty sure it's yours, not to use Amazon if you can't, or if you don't have to, because Amazon's a huge international corporation that is making a shitload of money off this stuff and killing a lot of small businesses.
And, yeah, and so of bad stuff about them.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think we had put some links into the show last week to Powell's, which is a website that is in, I believe they're out of, I want to say Washington State, but they're very progressive, I believe. And I can't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure their warehouse where the books are shipped from is Union. At least that's what I've been told. I've never actually further investigated it myself because I've never been to Washington. But they actually got back to us and saying that they'd be willing to partner with us to promote the books. And that's one place we're looking at. Another place is a worker-run collective that was in Western Mass where I went to grad school that is called Food for Thought Books, which I'm working with them on trying to establish some kind of partnership in that sense, too, of directing people to purchase the books there where you're actually supporting local businesses and not supporting big corporate internationals that are, you know, exploiting the crap out of people. And we're going to try to expand that. So if anybody out there does have any ideas of bookstores in their region, country region of the area, just let us know that are progressive and to the left of things so we can try to connect that to people in those countries. We don't want to be just specific to the US and the UK and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's get all the righteous folks connected to each other.
That's the idea. I think it's called a solidarity network.
Which
actually is cool because the Occupy movements have actually kind of brought that back into the discourse. I've been seeing that popping up a lot more, which is really cool.
The whole Occupy thing, I don't know what your sense is about the US, but it's having a really deep psychic effect in Britain, I think. I mean, regardless of the size of the actual occupations and all that kind of thing, it's having a genuine impact in the way people think about things. And particularly in Britain, where the biggest occupation is outside St. Paul's Cathedral in London, which is a sort of major site of the Church of England. And some of their responses have kind of revealed that that site is really the Vatican for capital. You know, it's not, there's this whole tension between sanctifying the acquisition of wealth and the Christian tradition of throwing the money lenders out of the temple. And there's this real dichotomy going on. There's a big, interesting theological upheaval going on in the Church of England and consequently in society generally about what we actually stand for and what we believe in. And it's quite remarkable because the occupation isn't huge. You know, it's not like there's tens of thousands of people camped out, but it's consistent enough to cause some really, really deep questioning by quite prominent people, and it's exposing very interesting fault lines in society. And I think it's a very effective movement. I really think it is. I think, you know, I think that proportionally the amount of pressure that is put on decision makers by Occupy is quite tremendous, and it's a very inspiring movement, and I'm very pleased to see that it's still going strong.
I agree, and I actually kind of reminded me just this past week I was working with a tour that if our listeners remember Lindsay, who was on episode I think it was 16 talking about a lot of immigration issues, there's a tour going on here in the region that's this lady Macarena from the Mexico Solidarity Network, but we took her down to Occupy Boston, and she was doing a video of just like asking people to share their experiences, like what their thoughts are on Occupy. And I kind of jumped in and was just like talking about how what I feel, at least in the US, US sense of what Occupy has done is it's created a space for constructive discourse to exist, to talk about the problems. And before, talking about the problems was kind of held to like a response on a blog to, you know, people ranting about a news article, but never really in the public realm.
And professional commentators who had, respectability, and they only said things within a certain, even the radicals only said things within a certain framework because certain things were unsayable. And, you know, there was this kind of discourse that was carried out in the newspapers and online and that kind of thing, but it wasn't really very democratic and very open, was it?
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's just really, really, it's great to see just growing because it's been very powerful. And in the past week, there was the Occupy Oakland that happened, and mm-hmm. in Occupy Oakland, they initially were attacked by the police, and it's really funny. And I saw this thing on Diaspora of like you know when a riot's going to happen based on how the people dress, and it shows a picture of all these police in riot gear because mm-hmm. they're the only ones that are going to cause the riot to occur. It's not going to be the protesters. Mm-hmm. It's the antagonization of preventing what they're asking for, which is a voice. And they were deeply attacked in Oakland to the point where, you know, shots were fired with rubber bullets to, you know, tear gas being shot all over the place, which was ridiculous. But it's inspiring because they've responded to it.
See, I found that absolutely amazing because there was a general strike in Oakland that closed the port down. Now, mm-hmm. the last place in the world that I expected a general strike to break down, to break out, that it would actually close down a port and have a real impact is the U.S. Now,
yeah.
I mean, you know, no disrespect to political activism in the U.S., but union density is low, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just never expected that the idea of a general strike would have any kind of resonance there. And it's amazing that in the U.S. of all places, there was this Oakland general strike that shut down a port. I think it's fantastic. And if it can happen there, like absolutely in the belly of the beast, in the heart of capitalism, the place where neoliberalism was born, if it can happen there, then clearly we have a real opportunity and real power to challenge the system that we live in and start doing something differently.
Yeah, no, it's very true. It's very true. And to people who don't know the emphasis and the reason why Oakland Port is very important is the West Coast is where almost all imports come into the U.S. And the International International Longshoremen's Workers Union, ILWU, is one of the most radical ones. But it's just great to see a general strike being effective, especially since there are laws that basically prevent general strikes from other unions because mm-hmm. there's, you know, because of the laws are really screwed up here is that, like, there's, you know, no secondary strikes or boycotts can occur.
Same. We have the same screwed up laws over here.
Yeah. So it's amazing to see it happen when it happens. And it's encouraging to see it grow. And actually, I might even put a link to it. I was watching this video. Do you know the actor Danny Glover?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
I didn't know he was such an activist until about 2 years ago. But he gave this phenomenal speech in Oakland in support of Occupy Oakland just the other day. And it was just, it's not that I looked at him as a leader, and I think that's really important, is that it's just that he gives a very passionate voice to what Occupy is and just saying, we need to stay strong, and we need to stay here, and we need to keep this movement going, because if we're going to build a better democracy, this is where it's going to happen. And mm-hmm. I think that's the most encouraging part, is that Occupy is building a democracy that our democracy is not doing. And mm-hmm. if it's one thing that is important, is that, you know, our system in the United States is claimed to be, by many citizens here, the best democratic system in the world, that, you know, there's nothing better and all this other, quite honestly, and I'll say this mm-hmm. as a born, raised American, complete crap, because our system is completely filled with shitloads of loopholes to preventing anything from being efficient when it comes to a democratic process. And these general assemblies that are happening at Occupy, as much as they may be slow and people complain that, like, oh, these meetings take for 2 hours, it's nothing compared to how long it takes any piece of legislation to even be heard in Congress, let alone mm-hmm. held back in committees and all this other stuff, where it's not being actually effectively discussed. And it just shows that our democratic process doesn't actually work. It doesn't work like it's been promised. It doesn't work like people say it is. And I know that some people will say, oh, we're not a democracy or a republic. Well, that's true. But we're also told that we're also a democracy. And maybe we have representatives that show, like, speak for the people of a community. The problem is they only speak for the community that voted them in. They don't speak for the community that didn't vote them in. And that's part of the problem when it comes to how you think of democracy. There are people mm-hmm. that are unspoken for. And mm-hmm. I think these Occupy movements have created that space for all people to be spoken for, all people to contribute, all people to partake. And if it's 2 hours out of your day, mm-hmm. that's nothing. That's nothing compared to, you know, what effective change can come from that. And that's what I'm so inspired by, is that this is growing. It's, you know, it's also starting to happen in countries that I didn't know if they were going to pick it up on, which mm-hmm. was Mexico. And there's now Occupy Tijuana
mm-hmm.
and there's an Occupy Mexico movement there too, which is great, because, you know, the larger this expands, and even to the point where it pisses off the media, that the slower it takes, the better it is. It's laying foundation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the amazing part, is that the foundation that it is laying. And I'm just loving it, because now I feel like, a couple of weeks ago, I felt leaving this country at this time is, it may not be the best idea because of the Occupy movements, but now I feel like the Occupy movements are going to be everywhere, and they're going to keep growing, and they're going to continue to grow. They're going to give life to movements that have been stale or ineffective because they've been ignored, to larger effective movements growing from this whole process too, which is great. Sorry, that was a bit of a rant there.
It was a fantastic rant, and it was brilliant, because I'm getting a bit slurry after all this whiskey. So I think it's better for our listeners if you talk more and I kind of shut up and listen.
Well, on that note, I'm going to open my third bottle of beer now. So I'm going to... there we go.
Oh, that sounds good. What do you want now?
I am now on a Smutty Nose Pumpkin Ale.
That sounds very interesting.
It does. A Smutty Nose actually sounds a little bit bougie to me. But it's a brewing company in Utica, New York. Which is upstate New York, if people are only familiar with New York City that are our listeners. But it's an interesting taste. I'm usually a fan of the stouts, so the chocolate stout by Harpoon is really good. I really do like that one. I'm going to have to get more of that. But the pumpkin ale is a bit of a new one for me. I've never had a pumpkin ale. I'm used to Oktoberfest and things like that in the fall.
Yeah, I've had some odd beers, but I don't think I've had a pumpkin one before.
Yeah, and... I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It's quite
pumpkin-y.
Yeah. With a bit of a spice, which I guess you kind of expect with like a cinnamon or a ginger type spice to it. But it's not terrible.
is this something called Damned by Faint Praise?
I will never let a beer go once I open it. But I will finish this one, and I will finish the pack that I got of it at some point. Not tonight.
But you're not mad about pumpkin beer though.
No. But the cool thing about tonight, and this is an American thing specific, is that I get an extra hour of sleep tonight because we kick our clocks back 1 hour tonight. Back to regular.
Yeah,
time.
We got that last weekend.
Yeah, so I'll instead of being 4 hours on you, I'll 4 hours now, I think, right now for the moment, and then tomorrow I'll be back to 5 or 6. I can't even remember anymore. I don't know these time changes because you're different than mainland Europe, right?
Yeah, we are. We're an hour behind mainland Europe. I had a few beers tonight as well. Most of mine were from BrewDog, which is a very interesting distillery in Peterhead, which is in the northeast of Scotland. They do very interesting experimental beers. Some of them are really, really horrible, but all of them are extremely interesting. And fortunately, the ones I had tonight were excellent. So my favorites are they do imperial stouts aged in Islay whiskey barrels, which I'm kind of keen on those because they're like deep strong stouts with a smoky whiskey finish to them, and those are awesome. It's been a good celebratory night.
Yes, it has. It has. The only unfortunate thing I have to say about a lot of these microbreweries that I'm actually drinking here is that I don't know how many of them are actually union, because most of the union breweries are actually like the big Michelob and...
Yeah, the big ones that make horrible beer. I know.
With certain exceptions. There's like Pabst Blue Ribbon. As much as it's a crappy beer, I can't say I actually really enjoy drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon, or PBR as most people around here call it. But it's the only bottle I've ever seen that actually has a label that says Union Made on the side of it.
Okay. Isn't that quite popular with hipsters in the US?
It might be. I don't know hipsters. I'm too old for that generation.
Yeah, okay.
It might be. It's popular amongst the labor folks, that's for sure.
Oh, okay. I'm beginning to think that maybe what we should do is like quit this whole cyber unions rubbish and just maybe open, you know, start a brewery and cyber unions microbrewery and just make our own beer and
make an IPA.
I think so, yeah. Nice, good.
That
nice fruity IPA. That sounds good. I think so, yeah. Should it be more popular than podcasts? Can't drink a podcast.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if people really enjoy our show of you being half cut to almost completely cut. And for our American listeners, cut is buzzed or
steamboat.
Sloshed. Steamboat. That's the Scotland way of saying that. Although that's my best Scotland accent. It was on saying Scotland. Mm.
Try harder.
Yeah. See, I'm surprised that your accent doesn't kick in even more as you get drunk, because I usually hear people's accents kick in more when they get drunk.
So yeah, and I know that my strong Glasgow accent has been a big problem for the show, with, you know, people struggling to understand it and everything.
Glasgow imported by South Africa,
something like that. Yes.
So, well, anyhow, I think we're going to start rambling now, so we might as well tidy up the end of the show here, and hope we didn't lose listeners by us getting a little bit buzzed or cut.
Or celebratory.
In the process. Celebratory, yes. Again, 25 episodes down, 25 more to go, and maybe we'll still be around.
Mm-hmm. Can I do a shout-out?
Sure, go right ahead.
The whiskey that I'm drinking tonight, the Abalora Bunny, was a gift from a good friend called Lindsay. So thank you, Lindsay, for the fantastic whiskey. It's made the news internationally.
Where does Lindsay hail from?
Lindsay is a union rep for National Australia Group. She lives in Glasgow, so she's a finance sector banking rep, and I know her through union work, and she's an excellent rep. She's very good.
Nice, nice. I'm a finance sector union rep. Sounds so foreign to me. Anyhow, on that note, to all our listeners, I hope you'll be back with us next week when we talk about a little bit more coherent things, when we're not getting sloshed. With that, Walton, I will see you next week as well.
Yeah, the only thing I hope is that all our listeners get back to us and say that the show's much better when we're drunk. It's a nice precedent to set. It's kind of easier to record. So everyone, if you like a drunken show, please let us know, and then we'll endeavor to get as drunk as possible next time. Slur into the microphones. Good night and thank you.
Thank you.